Way back in the 2000s, I published a snarky and skeptical article about a popular commercial massage technique. It was junk by my standards today, essentially correct junk, but it was a poor piece of science communication. It wasn't thorough, it was not meticulous, it was not classy. I was mostly preaching to a small choir of skeptics and enraging professionals invested in that technique. It was also an unwise full frontal assault on a specific brand, a legal threat magnet. So I took that trash down more than a decade ago. Rewriting was too big a job, so I nuked the page and dropped the topic into my maybe someday hole, a place many writing goals never escape from. But this topic has escaped. That someday has arrived. This is the second coming of that old article, a substantive and open-minded critical analysis of scraping massage, also known as instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization. IASTM is how I'll pronounce that for the rest of the article. Or its Chinese ancestor, Gua Sha. It is pointedly not about any specific modality empire. Brands are named here, but not singled out. This is a tour of the pros and cons of the generic concepts that are the basis for those brands. A distinction without a difference, perhaps? But there is a legal difference, and this is how I do it these days. There's still snarky skepticism. I am what I am, but also balance and diplomacy. This reincarnated article is members only for now, a relatively safe space for it, but not for long. I'll probably release this into the wild for everyone later this year. My name is Paul Ingram, and this is the Pain Sci Updates podcast. It's Wednesday, March 25th, 2026, and spring has arrived in Vancouver, and I'm rushing to record this, the first big members-only post in a while, before going on a little micro-vacation. By the time you're listening to this, I'll probably already be with my wife for a short stay in a classy old hotel downtown, where we can enjoy a change of scenery, go for some walks in Stanley Park, have cappuccinos from different coffee shops, and be closer to some friends and to my parents for a few days. Let's start with a high-level overview of scraping massage. Scraping massage is a type of massage therapy with hard-edged tools, often damaging soft tissues and causing bruising. Well, that's how you know it's working. Gua Sha is the traditional Chinese medicine practice that inspired all the westernized variants known as instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization, IASTM, and mostly represented by Graston technique, notorious for exotic and wicked-looking stainless steel tools. Scraping massage is a relatively obscure member of the manual therapy family, practiced mainly by chiropractors and massage therapists, and one of the best examples of a provocation therapy that tries to provoke healing with stress. Although scraping massage is not especially dangerous for healthy people in a clinical context, it's usually uncomfortable, and there is real potential for harm to many less obviously vulnerable patients and a few unlucky ones. It's particularly dangerous as a self-treatment, which is often overzealously done. Some self-massage tools in this category are particularly notorious for encouraging and enabling abuse. The cost of professional IASTM is high, the scientific plausibility is low, and the evidence is thin and weak. On the bright side, benefits might be implausible, but they aren't inconceivable. Stimulating soft tissue assertively might be useful in some cases, and people can experiment cautiously on themselves with little risk to body or wallet. But we should always keep in mind the subtle but very real opportunity cost of using up life energy that could have been used for something much better. Let's start the deep dive with scraping massage as Chinese folk medicine. Gua Sha is an ancient folk medicine practice in Asia. It's still so popular that it is sometimes called spooning because people often do it with spoons. That's from a 2015 survey of nearly a quarter of 2,300 surveyed Hong Kong citizens who used Gua Sha in the previous year. Their preferred tool for the technique was a spoon. People also use jar lids or coins or whatever else is handy. Gua Sha is the Mando, Guat Sa is the Canto, and it means roughly to scrape blockage. But Shaw defies translation, meaning much more than blockage in traditional Chinese medicine. You could also oversimplify it as stagnant energy, blood stagnation, or even toxin, but all of these fall short. It's really hard to pack the idea of pathogenic substance or energy believed to cause illness into just one or two words. That substance or icky energy is revealed by Gua Sha in the bruising that it causes, like reading tea leaves. Tissue without Sha supposedly won't mark up. The TCM claim is that the appearance of petechiae, a kind of bruise, red spots caused by bleeding into the skin, is diagnostic as well as therapeutic, exposing the culprit while exorcising it. Now, if that smells fishy to you, you get a gold star, because that is a closed loop of unfalsifiable reasoning. If marks appear, they prove that Sha was there and released. No marks? Well, then there was no Sha to release. The practitioner can't lose. Every outcome confirms the theory, or at least doesn't contradict it. A classic gambit in folk and alternative medicine. In the West, Gua Sha has mostly been dumbed down, we excel at dumbing down, to the far simpler claim of being a circulation booster, but neither view is valid. Like acupuncture, Gua Sha has spread around the world, surfing on a wave of credulous enthusiasm for anything old, foreign, and exotic sounding, but especially Asian fetishism. Jonathan Jerry, quote, "This is one of the tricks of the wellness industry, selling gadgets and procedures that come from ancient traditions far, far away. There is, after all, an endless supply of folk remedies that can be repackaged for a modern audience suspicious of medicine, but desirous of all natural lotions and potions." Now, to be fair, Gua Sha is not necessarily rough or even superstitious. For many millions of Chinese, Gua Sha is just a traditional method of self-massage, a kind of comfort food, and they don't think it's medical magic any more than they think kung fu masters can fly. Obviously, many Chinese are among the TCM faithful, but there's a wide spectrum. Many in the middle probably think it's somewhat healthful, analogous to countless Western wellness practices of dubious value. That survey that I mentioned earlier reported that 74% of surveyed Hong Kong Gua Sha users thought that they were treating pain or, oddly, respiratory problems. There was also a long tail of other candidates: anxiety, heat stroke, fever, infection, dizziness, diarrhea, vomiting, edema, and constipation. Bad idea to rely on Gua Sha for some of those, but the survey data didn't show us how much faith they had in those goals. I asked massage expert Nicholas Ng about his experience with Gua Sha. Quote, "My grandma and aunt used to use a porcelain soup spoon and a rice bowl of water. It causes mild redness most of the time with zero pain in all cases. I remember seeing full bruising once in a massage school as a demo, but even that didn't seem to cause any pain." To be clear, the bruising often does not require painful intensity. Bruising is notoriously easy to do without noticing, and even easier painlessly with a hard edge on the skin. My wife has had hundreds of mystery bruises in our 25 years together. She can bruise herself by waving a leg in the general direction of a coffee table. Bruising susceptibility varies widely, with very low thresholds for many people and many reasons. Aging skin is notoriously bruise-prone, thanks to dermatoporosis, age-related skin fragility. Hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome and the other hypermobility spectrum disorders all involve inherent fragility of the capillaries and supporting structures. Vitamin C deficiency weakens collagen and vessel integrity. Anticoagulant therapy and corticosteroid use either impair clotting or thin the skin, and there are many other drugs with bruising side effects, the SSRIs and SNRIs. NSAIDs, that's your ibuprofen, which practically everybody has a supply of. Fish oil supplements will do this. Vitamin E, chemotherapy, and targeted cancer therapies. And last but very much not least, alcohol will make you bruise prone. So in fact, the superficial bruising of Gua Sha is more likely to be painless than painful. But sometimes it does hurt, and that does matter. More on this below. scraping massage as supposedly advanced Western soft tissue mobilization. Unlike acupuncture, gua sha was also aggressively rebranded and commercialized in the West without invoking ancient Chinese wisdom, using a different wellness industry trick. Vague pseudoscientific justifications and inevitable claims of superior technique and technology. Fancy scraping tools. So first we dumbed it down, and then we junked it up. Chiropractors were the first to get on the technological gua sha bandwagon in North America, where it is now best known as the eponymous Graston technique. Graston technique is occasionally described as a chiropractor's invention, which seems false on its face, but still potentially true in spirit. That is, it was not invented by a chiropractor, but probably developed as a business by chiropractors. David Graston was not a chiropractor, but an amateur athlete. I have not been able to confirm this, but he may have worked quite closely with chiropractors to promote Graston technique. Regardless of how it happened, it has become one of the larger manual therapy modality brands of the last few decades and is practiced mainly by chiropractors. So Graston is the best known, but there are a few others, some of them defunct or close. In addition to Graston technique, we also have ASTYM, that's A-S-T-Y-M, Hawk grips, adhesion breakers, Factor, F-A-K-T-R, fascial abrasion technique, and Technica Gavilan. So those are the clinical brands, mostly offered by licensed healthcare professionals of some kind or another, people with specialized training and certifications in those techniques, and they are collectively known as instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization. All of these gua sha descendants involve rigid tools made of plastic, ceramic, steel, stone, bone, often with quite a sharp edge. The idea is to achieve, quote, maximum tissue penetration. ASTYM is clearly keen on tool quality. They all advertise special qualities and properties like cutting edge, unique double bevel design, a mirror finish, a patented textured surface. So what's it good for? What are the goals and methods of ASTYM? The term instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization implies a specific medical purpose, mobilization, that mostly isn't the true point. No soft tissue is ever mobilized in any technical sense. It's almost poetry, a euphemism for the true goal. Not that it's a secret. The stated goal is to, quote, break down scar tissue and fascial restrictions. This, of course, harmonizes strongly with the pseudoscientific enthusiasm for all things fascia, the sheets of connective tissue that wrap everything in anatomy, literally our gristle, which is allegedly prone to getting restricted and in need of release. The idea of release, while vague, is the most honest one-word description of the point of ASTYM. And how do you release it? With tools, by force. You damage it, you tear it. Plenty of fascial therapists insist their methods are gentle, that they aren't trying to tear anything, that they are artfully persuading fascia to loosen up. That isn't possible, but that's what they say. But with ASTYM tools, there is no hiding behind claims of gentleness. They are obviously intended to damage tissue to one degree or another. Sorry, they're meant to mobilize tissue. The fundamentally destructive character of scraping massage is most evident with some massage tools, the self-massage tools. For instance, the Faddish Fascia Blaster is a consumer product that is dangerously and successfully marketed mainly as a cosmetic self-treatment for cellulite. The fascial blaster has multiple hard plastic claws used to rub over the skin. Bruising is common, regardless of whether the manufacturer endorses it. The kindest thing you can say about the fascial blaster is that it lacks scientific support or plausibility, but many criticisms are harsher. The company, product, and its harms have been strongly reviewed, and several legal battles have already been fought over it since its debut in the mid-2010s. Cosmetic gua sha has been endorsed by influencers ad nauseum, including, of course, Gwyneth Paltrow, who sells the glossy black Skin Whisperer's Obsidian Gua Sha Reformer Tool for US dollars 89. Ugh, eye roll. It's time to talk about the safety of scraping massage, especially, I asked them. So casual gua sha is often low-key and painless, but it's not always that tame. And clinical scraping massage, I asked him, is routinely applied with painful intensity. Treating pain with painful treatments, fighting fire with fire, is the dubious spirit of all the provocation therapies. And it is always inherently risky, to some degree, because the whole point is to break some eggs to make an omelet. The damage is mostly minor, but there are a few ways that it can go wrong. First point. Typical massage has a variety of potential harms, all shared with scraping massage, but it's mostly the risks of strong massage that are relevant here. However it's delivered, intense massage involves underestimated risks of muscle damage, especially in common kinds of vulnerable patients. Sometimes we feel cruddy after a massage, like it was a big workout. Post-massage soreness and malaise, PMSM, is embraced as a minor side effect and hand-waved away by almost everyone as some kind of no-pain, no-gain, or healing crisis thing, but it needs explaining. Massage is not detoxifying in any way. That's pseudoscientific nonsense. Ironically, it might be the opposite. Some PMSM is probably caused by mild rhabdomyolysis, a type of poisoning that can occur even with heavy exercise. And possibly strong massage, which is a plausible hypothesis. If so, it's a big deal, a nasty side effect. There are also, by the way, some non-rhabdo explanations for milder PMSM. I have a whole article on this topic. Now, superficial scraping won't do this, just skin damage, not muscle. But mud scraping massage isn't superficial. It's impossible to achieve the routinely stated goal of releasing fascial restrictions without also breaking some muscle cells. Risks increase when applied to delicate anatomy. Without the sensory detail and intimacy of touch, tools always make it easier to go overboard. But scraping tools are in a different league, requiring even more care. And some practitioners are shockingly careless about where they apply them. You would think that people would know better than to scrape over structures like, say, the throat and trachea. But nope. One patient had gua sha performed on his throat, which alarmingly inflamed his epiglottis, making it difficult for him to speak. This is from a case study that I've cited. His inflammation resolved quickly with intravenous steroids, but yikes, clearly that scraping was done hard enough to affect deeper tissues, and obviously gua sha practitioners should know better. But as Jonathan Jerry notes, when a practice is unregulated and becomes popular, you never know how well-trained the person caring for you is. So, yeah, apparently the throat is an option. What's next? Testicular scraping? Eyeballs? Finally, scraping massage has a risk not shared with other kinds of massage, a small but real danger of infection, roughly similar to acupuncture. Acupuncture always breaks the barrier of the skin, but it does so minimally and usually with adequate infection control, like disinfectants and gloves. Scraping massage does less damage in one spot, but damages a lot more skin area, and technique varies widely. Much of it is too aggressive, sometimes doing much more damage, and there's never any infection control. Even minor skin scraping carries some infection risk because it compromises multiple layers of defense at once. The outer skin, the stratum, corneum, and epidermis, is a highly effective infection barrier, by far most important. Even shallow scrapes allow some microbes direct entry, reaching the dermis without technically breaking the skin like a needle would. Scraping disrupts the relatively dry and acidic outer layers that contain antimicrobial peptides. Scraping also disrupts cells and small vessels, triggering inflammation that recruits immune defenses, but opening a transient window for microbes to get a foothold. Tools are rarely completely sterile, and there are all kinds of subtle immune impairments that patients are probably oblivious to. Here's a quote, a short paragraph from Jonathan Jerry's description of a case study of an infection. The risk of infection, Nielsen outlines, though, is real and not the only possible harm from gua sha. You can see that reusing the same stone on multiple patients without disinfecting it is not a good idea. The bruises are under the skin, sure, but tiny cuts may result from the treatment, and the stone picks up blood-borne microorganisms and delivers them to the next patient who accidentally gets cut. One such patient was reported on a few years ago. She developed nodules and pustules on her arms and legs filled with bacteria called Mycobacterium macilensa. Yep, never said that one out loud before. She had to be put on antibiotics and have her nodules drained every month for nearly a half year. So despite these concerns, and they are real, significant physical harm is still an outlier. But even the discomfort and unpleasantness of ISM can only be justified by strong evidence of efficacy. It has to work. If it doesn't, it's just mild torture that you pay for. Even confidence in a small benefit wouldn't cut it. Low-value treatments and over-optimization of health and wellness always have an opportunity cost. Wasted time, money, attention that people need for better things. Okay, it's time for the science. Does scraping massage work? What does the science say about it? The gua sha roots of ISM are scientifically weak, if not hopelessly bankrupt. Quote, gua sha will need more than a spoon or a jar lid to smooth out the many wrinkles in its scientific literature, writes Jonathan Jerry. His rather scathing high-level overview of the research. Quote, having read dozens of papers on gua sha, I can say that their failings are exactly what we're used to when it comes to alternative medicine. Small studies done at single centers with no long-term follow-up in which the control group comparison is problematic. Basically, you can't blind people to gua sha. There is no placebo gua sha that doesn't also do what gua sha does. Experimenters resort to heating pads, standard of care, or wait lists, which means that at best we can say that doing gua sha can be better than doing nothing. When a patient dealing with chronic pain gets recruited into a study in which a person strokes their body for 15 minutes after being told that this might help with pain, is it any wonder that they report that their pain has gone down? Placebo effects are common, and these studies do not manage to subtract them from the equation. Things are no better for ISM. The so-called literature doesn't really deserve to be called that. It's underpowered and low quality, useless at best, but arguably worse than useless because it mostly declares undeserved victories, making it more like a promotional exercise than an earnest attempt to figure out what helps people. In 2025, Tang et al. Reviewed 11 trials that met their criteria, six with a particularly high risk of bias. They reported moderate certainty evidence for pain reduction and low certainty for function, which sounds good and is technically supported by their data, but it's the most charitable possible spin. The truth is hiding in what they chose to review. Selection, bias, cherry picking has always been the most obvious way to put your thumb on the science scale, and they included only studies of ISM added to other treatments. They asked the question most likely to produce a positive result. Their conclusion that ISM reduces pain doesn't tell us that ISM was the active ingredient. What we want is moderate certainty that ISM does anything beyond placebo and extra attention and treatment, and their data definitely can't support that. Giving patients more of anything that they assume is the good stuff basically always produces an effect, regardless of anything else. That is by far the most likely explanation for the positive results here. A 2019 review had similar problems, superficially positive results that just aren't credible. I have a long footnote about this one, but I think I'll skip it in the audio version because it's basically just an elaboration on garbage in, garbage out. When the literature is this rotten, I like to give a particularly bad example, though, an especially flawed trial. Today's winner is one of the less small trials of ISM, and any casual reader of the abstract alone could be forgiven for thinking it's a win for ISM, but it's meaningless. The worst of the many problems with this one is that they registered their trial after data collection, largely defeating the purpose of registration. Again, I've got a long footnote about this one. Again, it's mostly just a litany of typical flaws in trials. Fortunately, some researchers have reviewed evidence like that more honestly. One particularly critical 2023 review by Nazari et al. Of 46 mostly junky trials showing no meaningful improvements in function, pain, or range of motion for upper, lower, or spinal conditions. They write, "The available evidence on IASTM does not support its use to improve function, pain, or range of motion." And what's available in the evidence is only, as they write it, very low quality evidence for all included outcomes, and, quote, "the publication of IASTM trials in suspected predatory journals is increasing." So the review doesn't so much conclude that IASTM doesn't work as IASTM research really sucks. But that is a damning signal in the context of a lot of bias. Dozens of trials biased in favor of a treatment that actually works will never fail to find its effect. Reviews like this are technically reporting only an absence of evidence that in a perfect world would simply mean we don't know. But in a messy world with broken peer review, a low-quality body of evidence with a high risk of bias will never deliver evidence of absence, because biased researchers predictably p-hack their way to results that they can spin as promising, always enough that they can plausibly say more study needed. If there was any good treatment effect to find, these trials would not only have found it, they would have exaggerated it. But what they found wasn't even impressive with the inevitable inflation of results that bias causes. Another earlier honest review by Cheatham et al. Concluded, "The current research has indicated insignificant results which challenge the efficacy of IASTM as a treatment for common musculoskeletal pathology." And even some IASTM proponents have conceded the gap between bold claims and thin evidence. Leonard Van Gelder, a self-described huge advocate of IASTM, but apparently also a critical thinker, quote, "There are some who have purported the tools as being downright magical in their abilities to heal patients. Some major brands claim 80 to 100% success rates for nearly every musculoskeletal condition under the sun, but record and maintain these records privately, available on request only. From the published experimental study realm, far less data is available." Well, speaking of claims of high success rates, let's talk about that in a little bit more detail. They're almost nonsense by definition. For instance, as of early 2026, ASTM.com prominently claims a 96.5% success rate, an amusingly large and precise number, and a huge red flag for any thinking person. Any such claim is a marketing claim, not a scientific one. Unfortunately, that is what drives most of this industry. Such claims are routine for IASTM, but success rates just aren't something individual clinicians can know. And even if they could, it wouldn't validate anything because there are far too many confounders. Self-serving claims are common in fee-for-service manual therapy. Freelance therapists like to over-promise and almost always conflate customer satisfaction with efficacy. People want to feel that they're getting their money's worth and avoid admitting dissatisfaction. Most clinicians grossly underestimate how misleading this combination is. Claims of high success rates are delusions of grandeur and ironically exemplify the kind of arrogance that all med professionals condemn in medicine. Amazing results are mostly impossible in healthcare. Most painful problems are the tip of an etiological iceberg, and genetic variation alone tends to guarantee treatment failures. Some readers will doubt that such an obscure therapy is covered by an insurer, but IASTM is almost certainly covered by insurance in some places, both public and private. Probably not specifically, but as a component of massage or manual therapy at the clinician's discretion. even if insurers were willing to pay specifically for IASDM, this does not validate scraping massage in any way because insurance is not evidence. So is gua sha a waste of time and money if you just like how it feels? People are entitled to spend their resources on whatever they like, of course, but everyone else is also entitled to question their judgment. People can put value on anything they want, a basic principle of life and economics, the subjective theory of value. Value isn't automatic for anything, not even gold or diamonds. It is always bestowed by our preferences and priorities. In this sense, we can never waste our money on things we want. Unless we want them for silly reasons, what if what we want is just pure wishful thinking? It's a bit of a reach to place value on the mere feeling of scraping massage. What people actually like is the idea that it's therapeutic. Subtract the belief and the value vanishes. The feeling alone is not enough. What about nostalgia, though? Even the comforting familiarity of gua sha probably isn't enough after the illusion of medical benefit is broken. How many people are going to do it just because their mother showed them how when they were 10? A few, I suppose, but not many. Done in the bruising, scar-busting spirit of the thing, it clearly isn't inherently pleasant. And yes, I have tried. And if you're not doing it that hard, then it's just a suboptimal form of massage. Either way, it's not intrinsically pleasant, and how it feels only has whatever value and meaning people can gin up in spite of that. It has to be rationalized, and those rationalizations are weak. I will always avoid yucking anyone's yum if it isn't particularly problematic and the reasons are respectable. But it's a spectrum, and at some point I'm going to start expressing my concerns. People will value things for bad reasons, and skeptics will point out that the reasons are bad, and it will continue to amaze me that so many people are so willing to risk throwing away substantial amounts of time and money. You'd think that would be more of a disincentive than it actually is, but clearly we are a very wasteful species. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.